Welcome, everybody, to the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. For the record, it's April 12th, 2017. A lot of bills up today. We're going to start off with opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 990. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 990 exempts small modular reactors from certain siting restrictions that apply to nuclear-fueled thermal power plants. Go ahead and dispense with the rest of my summary and let the folks at the witness table speak to it. I can tell you that there are no amendments to this bill, and we have not yet received fiscal or revenue impacts on the measure.
Okay.
Well, this is 990.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Brian Boquist, District 12. However, this is actually a continuation of a discussion that we've been having on veterans and emergency management. The issue with 990 is, if you recall, way, way, way back when in 1986, after a whole series of events across the country with large liquid nuclear reactors that were designed when some people were teaching history, probably, not to be disrespectful to my ranking member there.
Senator, I was in the state Senate in 1986.
All right, so there we go. I rest my case.
Is that 1886? Okay.
So there was a whole series of events about the problems with nuclear power back in those days. And, of course, advance forward now many, many years into the future. And, of course, we're now looking at a power grid that is generally at times can be overwhelmed. Most of us accepted the reality of a Cascadia type of event that might impact energy. And, of course, we are trying to move to more diversified power. In 2015, there was a discussion about the utilization of small modular reactors. That's a technology, interesting enough, that I'm willing to bet that Senator Thompson's out, maybe. But every member in this room that's elected legislator voted on the tax credits and the various credit systems at Oregon State University and the development funds that allowed for the development of this. And contrary to popular belief, we do have a nuclear reactor in Oregon at Oregon State University, and it has been the test bed for this type of research and other research. 2016, moving forward, we actually had a series of hearings in the Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Group, again about distributed power, and we actually looked at some of then Senator Edwards's ideas on inline hydropower in irrigation districts. We actually looked at some other new and evolving stuff, and we had a very lengthy hearing on small modular reactors, which will be explained by these gentlemen and not me. The basic concept, though, is that through a series of both initiatives, referrals, and stuff, we presently, right now, in the state, there is not a prohibition, contrary to probably, so it outlawed, or it failed 2-1, and there's not a constitutional prohibition on the use of nuclear power. The question is how can you do it safely? How can you do it within the Energy Siting Committee? At least one member here besides myself have actually discussed this in the Rules Committee with, appointees going to the Energy Siting and trying to figure out what are all of our options for distributive power. In a nutshell, what that means is instead of going out in eastern Oregon, in none of our districts, and building some 500 or 600 megawatt power plant and then plug it into the grid right now that's likely to fall down, and of course everybody wants to expand, but nobody wants it in their neighborhood, the distributive power concept is go to somewhere that is geographically sound, say outside of Salem, let the locals in that county and area vote for it, and put smaller plants of less than 300 megawatts in those areas so that if there is an emergency, that power is then for that area and can be utilized in that area. And the old-fashioned system that's flipping the switches can work and you can actually power that. This is envisioned in the future, way in the future, in places that are like Eugene, Springfield, or Medford, or Bend, so that you could actually site smaller power plants in those areas. This particular technology they're going to talk about here briefly is actually modular. They call it nuke in a box, kind of a little catchy title. And what it really means is that these are small, 50-megawatt modules, and, of course, they're dry, and they're self-contained. So unlike the old Three Mile Island that got us running down this thing when some of us were in the Senate in 1986, this is a completely new and developed technology that we have helped pay for. That's what basically the bill does. It makes some minor modifications. We're not expecting to go build anything in the next 6 months. I mean, there's plenty of people in transportation that think we're going to go build things in 6 months, but as you know, it takes a much longer time than that. With that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Chris, give you a quick background. I have asked staff for your edification to post onto the internet the briefing slides and the presentation that we received in emergency preparedness, and it actually walks through it and you can see it. This is not your normal, I guess, nuclear power plant.
Thank you. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Chris Colbert. I am the Chief Strategy Officer for NuScale Power, headquartered in suburban Portland, Oregon. I'm here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 990 that would establish the requirements for the siting of small module reactors in Oregon. Today, NuScale Power is a leading developer of small modular reactors in the United States. We have over 300 staff working in Oregon and well over 300 patents granted or pending worldwide. In addition to the NuScale footprint of employees, we've also done a lot of work with folks at Oregon Ironworks, Greenberry Industrial, and Harris Thermal. So we've expanded beyond the original footprint of what was NuScale and brought more benefit to the state of Oregon. Our design is uniquely safe. We have solved one of the most vexing problems of the nuclear industry with what we call the Triple Crown of Nuclear Safety. In the case of a loss of all sources of electricity at the plant, the NuScale power module shuts itself down and self-cools for an unlimited period of time. With no operator action required, no need for additional water, and no need for electricity. The NuScale power plant uses the simple properties of physics, convection, conduction, and gravity to drive the flow of coolant in the reactor. The thermal hydraulic properties and capabilities of our technology have been demonstrated through an extensive test program conducted at the Oregon State University and inspected by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and which are protected by numerous patents. Because our SMR is safe, small, and has numerous barriers between the nuclear fuel and the environment, the emergency planning zone for a NuScale plant is expected to be greatly reduced from the 10-mile emergency planning zone for current reactors in the U.S. In fact, we believe that it may be limited to the plant site boundary, approximately 74 acres. In December 2016, after nearly $560 million invested and the dedication of over 600 full-time and part-time staff, NuScale submitted a 12,000-page design certification application to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. In March 2017, less than 90 days later, the U.S. NRC notified NuScale that our application had been accepted for review. We expect that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission will complete the review within 40 months, and we will have a design certification by 2020. Our first project is expected to be the Utah Association of Municipal Power Systems Carbon-Free Power Project in Idaho at the Idaho National Laboratory Reservation. We expect that that will enter into commercial operation with first power in 2026. The NuScale power module is particularly well-suited for providing reliable, resilient power for mission-critical applications, balancing variable renewable generation sources, and providing heat and electricity for non-electric applications such as desalination. Importantly, a NuScale SMR is designed to withstand man-made and natural disasters such as earthquakes, cyber and physical attacks, and aircraft impacts. This is an important capability as the availability of electricity in the aftermath of such events is critical to providing emergency services and accelerating a return to normalcy. With respect to Senate Bill 990, we welcome the local voice, and citing an SMR as the voice of the local community is critical in confirming buy-in by those most affected by citing an SMR. Unlike today's operating nuclear fleet, the NuScale SMR is designed to have an emergency planning zone that is as small as the planned site boundary, again, 74 acres. In summary, we think it is prudent for Oregon to consider the siting of SMRs in Oregon, and we support Senate Bill 990. It is important to see continued support for our technology from the state of Oregon to help justify our continued growth and development in Corvallis and Portland. We believe that we can provide clean, affordable, and reliable energy to Oregon, home to NuScale and the founding of our technology. NuScale appreciates the opportunity to present to the committee, and we are ready to answer any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
More?
No. You questions. Said to be short, Mr. Chair.
Questions? Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually visited the nuclear reactor in Corvallis, and very impressive for the size it is and what it can produce and the limited amount of waste that it creates, which is almost none, which is pretty amazing in itself. So it's very impressive.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Buck. How much does one of these reactors cost?
So we're looking at a plant. As a 50-megawatt module can be anywhere from 50 to 600 megawatts in plant size because we can scale them. For a 600-megawatt plant, we're looking at about $3
billion.
$3 billion.
With a B.
For comparison, a 700-megawatt coal plant costs about $2.2 billion. So it's within the same realm.
And a full-scale traditional nuclear plant is about $15 billion.
That's correct. That would be along the size of a 2,200-megawatt plant that they're building in Georgia and South Carolina currently.
And just for the record, Mr. Chair, comparably speaking, for the sizes that we're talking about here and having have to be approved by local voters, it's just about the same cost from conventional power.
Is there water usage? There's some water, right?
So it's up to the option of the owner. It can either be wet-cooled. That's for recondensing the steam in the steam turbine, or it can be dry-cooled. So either option is available with this technology because it doesn't need access to a long-term water supply for a safe shutdown.
And the refueling, is you take the whole thing back to the plant?
So the refueling is in a situation where we have 12 modules. We can take one 50-megawatt module out at a time. The rest of the plant continues to operate, and in 10 days, that module will be returned to service. So you never have the whole plant going down out of operation.
Using reprocessed fuel or?
Currently, our plan is really becomes an option for the owner, but it can use new fuel, which currently the fleet does, or it can also use mixed oxide fuel, which is the reprocessing type of situation you're referring to.
And there's no, on these, as I recall from looking at them before, there's no potential for meltdown.
That's correct. The design is such that it everything that is needed for safety is in the pool. And what we've determined is that by way of the analysis that the NRC requires, there are no design basis accidents, which results in the uncovering of the core fuel. So there's no meltdown in those situations.
Do the modules actually sit in a pool?
The modules sit in a pool of water. That pool of water is common to all 12 modules, and that pool of water is itself located below grade in a steel-lined concrete pool.
And the plan for the spent fuel?
Spent fuel will be treated as current spent fuel is currently subject to NRC regulation. We can accommodate all 60 years' worth of fuel at the plant, both in the spent fuel pool and in dry cast storage. And in fact, that's the situation that was done for Trojan, where they had it originally in spent fuel pool and now sitting in dry casks on a pad on the plant site.
Pretty much like the Northwest Generating Station in Tri-Cities.
That is correct.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I forgot to tell him you're the former PUC commissioner. Sorry, they sort of got an answer. Sorry about that.
More questions? It's a great process. Good luck. Your first one's in Idaho, right?
First one will be in Idaho, sir, yes.
On the reservation out there, nuclear reservation?
That is correct. We have an agreement with the Department of Energy for siting it.
When do you look to be operational?
First plant, we look to be operational by 2026 for the UAMPS customer. We could probably be operational a few years earlier than that. It really depends upon how quickly our customer wants to move forward.
Six modules in the first one?
We're looking at 12 modules in the first one.
Wow.
Yes.
It's a big plant.
It's a good size plant.
What's your estimated productive cost per megawatt?
So for the folks at UAMPS, because they're a public power entity, we're looking at somewhere between $75 and $85 a megawatt hour.
It's a little above market now.
It's a little bit of market. So it really comes down for them. They're exposed to retiring coal plants in the West. Mm-hmm. And do they want to take the risk of what natural gas prices might do in the future and what might the regulations be over natural gas in the future as well? They've had a number of plants shut down because of other environmental regulations, which is why they find themselves in a situation of looking for this type of clean energy option.
It's a great concept. Glad they're testing it there. Somebody else is dying. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Good presentation. We don't have anybody. Do we have anybody else up on this? No, we're done. Anybody else wish to testify on this bill? Don't want to take a shot, Roman? You can pass. Okay. All right, so we'll close on that one. And we will go to, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 538.
Ready for me, Mr. Chair?
Cool. Go for it.
All right. Senate Bill 538 directs the Oregon Business Department, Development Department and Department of Consumer Business Services to collaborate on conducting a study regarding state regulation of businesses and persons engaged in occupations. It directs the departments to research, study, and compile data regarding processes, requirements, and fees imposed by state agencies on Oregon businesses and persons engaged in operations, or rather occupations. It requires a report to the Legislative Assembly by September 15, 2018, sunsets December 31st, 2018, and declares an emergency and becomes effective upon passage. This measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, Mr. Chair, and to that extent, we have a fiscal light statement and a statement of no revenue impact and no amendments, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Welcome, Senator.
Hello, Mr. Chair. I'm getting there.
Take your time.
Almost there. All right.
Take your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Kim Thatcher, Senator from District 13. This bill is sort of one of those repeat bills in that I had brought it forward in 2015. And where did it come from before that? It's as a result of some long conversations with agencies that impact business and with business groups, including NFIB, AOI, chambers. I think the state chamber was there. DCBS. Anyway, the goal was is try to get our arms wrapped around the constant refrain that we hear that we are overregulated. Okay, so where are we overregulated? Let's figure it out. Let's make this a more business-friendly state. Not only talking about businesses, but people in occupations. We are one of the more over-licensed states as far as occupations are concerned. I think there was a White House report from July 2015, I believe it said that Oregon jobs, over 27% of the jobs in Oregon require a license of some sort. So this is looking at, it's very broad. And so in order to wrap our arms around this elephant, so to speak, and get down to it, we decided we would have to study it. So what does the bill do? The bill directs the Oregon Business Department to collaborate with the Department of Consumer and Business Services and conduct study regarding state regulation of businesses and occupations. The goal is to figure out what we have here. The processes, requirements that are imposed by the different state agencies in both renewal of licenses, permits and certificates or registrations needed to conduct businesses or to even engage in your job. So I guess it's sort of a two-pronged approach for, you know, sometimes you have sole proprietors that have to be licensed. Like they're a carpenter, but you also have a carpenter that can work for a business, the contractor, whatever. So it takes into account both these things that impact the economy of our families and communities in Oregon. So it was to be structured at finding barriers to business and licensed professionals and look for those that have a negative impact on the initial or continuing phases of business and occupation. It allows the agencies to collaborate with institutions of higher education and allows them to seek donations, gifts, grants, in other words, to support the study. Hey, I'd throw in $50 my own. Didn't help.
We'll take it.
Only 50?
The department will obtain feedback from businesses and licensed individuals through surveys, focus groups, or other means. It would require a report to the Legislative Assembly on or before September 15th, 2018. If they need more time, I'm willing to amend it to allow for more time than that. There was concern expressed at one time that they thought the study was too broad. Well, I would actually say that the bill is flexible because it allows the agency to narrow the scope of what they would want. Hello. Narrow the scope of this particular thing. It's taken us years to arrive where we are in our regulatory environment here in Oregon. So I think it will take a while to make it right. here in the state. And I think this is a good launching point to better understand some of those regulations and some of those impacts. The scope of the study seems broad, but it says in the bill, right there, that departments may, I'm looking at lines 16 and 17 on the first page, the departments may narrow the focus of the study to target specific subjects that the departments deem to be of greater relevance and significance. So, it also allows them to have an advisory committee. They can have members of the Legislative Assembly help facilitate and guide the execution of the study. What I was really hoping to do is leverage work that has already been done. We have institutions of higher learning that have looked at business issues and regulatory things related to this. We have other departments, other agencies that have also looked at this. Let's look at stuff that's already been done and not necessarily start a brand new study if that would impact the impact on the budget. I don't want that to happen. But I think we would positively impact the revenue budget in the future if we could get our arms around this and make government the right size, I suppose, to make both a safe, protect the public, the consumers, and the environment, and employees with certain regulations, but also have sensible growth and development. So the aim of the bill is to have a better understanding of the process and help state government identify those things that negatively impact business and people who engage in occupations to make it better for, Oregon. That's the goal, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Questions? Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a great goal. As many people know, I have a small business advisory council, and I know everyone on that council will love this bill. One of the things that you said I like, we do have to go slow, make sure that we're protecting the public and employees and the other businesses who compete, because that's one of the issues that we really have to look into, is make sure that the competing businesses are not hurt by under regulation. So I think it's a good thing to look into.
I think we've done this a couple of times, and the way you have it tied up there would be very good. I think Pat Allen, who currently is the director of DCBS, spent a couple of years doing this when he worked for Business Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Mr. Chair. I could be misremembering, but I think he was there. And, he did a lot of good work. And like I said, we have looked into we've nibbled around the edges in different institutions around the state. It would be nice to be able to get some of these studies together and maybe look for the low-hanging fruit, if you will, and kind of collate and kind of get this all together in one spot to see if we can start making things better. That's all.
Okay. Great. Any other questions? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Okay. Anthony Smith and Jonathan Thompson, those are the two I have signed up. If you both want to go up, that'd be great. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Thompson, members of the committee, for the record, Anthony Smith, Oregon State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. And as you've probably heard me say many times by now this session, we represent nearly 7,000 businesses in Oregon, many being the smallest of small business. And I just remind you that 90% of our members have fewer than 25 employees, and 70% have fewer than 10 employees. But those small businesses in aggregate represent over 60,000 Oregon jobs. And I'm very happy to be here in front of you today in support of Senate Bill 538, which, as you heard from the bill's sponsor, would direct Business Oregon and DCBS to conduct a study regarding state regulations on businesses. And the scheduling of this hearing is actually very timely, because I've been thinking about this quite a bit lately, and I actually just wrote an article in a local publication about this very subject. And the emphasis of that article was basically that while economies expand and contract during good times and bad, regulations tend to pile on, and the size and scope of the regulatory environment grows and grows and grows, and then an economic downturn hits at some point, and the new regulations that we pass during those prosperous times end up weighing twice as much on our mom-and-pop small businesses as they did maybe when the times were good. So, NFIB, we regularly survey our members on nearly every issue of concern on small business, and out of 75 issues measured by our most recent small business problems and priorities study, unreasonable government regulations rank the second biggest worry of small business owners, just behind the cost of health care. And we wanted to delve a little deeper into the issue of regulations, and so we conducted an additional survey back in February specifically on regulations, and two big conclusions came out of that study. First was that agencies seem to be really very good at estimating the fiscal impacts of legislation on their own budgets, but in the opinions of our members, they're not always as great at estimating the fiscal impacts of their rules and regulations on private sector businesses. In contrast, we have members who can tell you exactly how much paid sick time, minimum wage, or even a proposed paid family leave bill would cost them in real dollars and cents. And in Section 1, Sub 6 of this bill, it would allow for the convening of an advisory committee to help facilitate and guide the execution of the study. And this would really help in compiling good, honest data that will lead us to useful public policy reform recommendations. Secondly, the regulations are administered by a myriad of government agencies at different levels of government, impacting sometimes very narrowly defined types of businesses. So it's often extremely difficult to construct a comprehensive approach to easing the burden. However, the better policymakers understand the impacts of regulations on small business owners, the better we can attempt to lessen that burden. So where do we start? How do we get you the information that you need to make those decisions? From our point of view, Senate Bill 538 is a great place to start. And I would just mention briefly that things have changed a bit since this concept was last before you in 2015. Back then, we didn't yet have the Office of Small Business Assistance or their annual reports, which might give Business Oregon and DCBS some very good data to look at as a starting point, some direction on where to focus their efforts. For example, licensing, the issue of licensing accounted for 44% of the cases handled by the Office of Small Business Assistance in 2016, up from 38% in 2015. And today here in the building, I actually ran into Ruth Miles, the small business advocate at the Office of Small Business Assistance, and she said that the Corporations Division, and she allowed me to share this with you, the Corporations Division just recently finished surveying about 400,000 people that they had email addresses for, and they got several thousand responses on a short survey asking questions. I don't know exactly what they asked, but she said it was on this topic of what are barriers to expanding or growing your business. And they're in the process right now at the Office of Small Business Assistance of compiling that data and trying to get some information out to people who can affect policy change. So I think that's another great example of the fact that there is data out there within the agencies, and this might be a great opportunity to have one agency, or in this case, two agencies, looking at finding those data groups and compiling them into something that could really be useful in future decision making. One more thing I just wanted to have you consider is the concept of return on investment. And in business, of course, every policy that we impose on ourselves generally comes with some kind of return on investment in mind. And the state should really take the same approach when we're looking at regulation. If we aren't regularly looking at that ROI, then we can't say for certain that we're getting our money's worth. And we should really be constantly reevaluating our regulatory environment, taking into account economic conditions, and making sure that the benefits of the regulations are always outweighing the cost. And I think that's exactly what Senate Bill 538 seeks to do. So, again, on behalf of thousands of small businesses in Oregon, we would ask you to support Senate Bill 538. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Jonathan.
Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Thompson, members of the Senate Business and Transportation Committee. My name is Jonathan Thompson. My wife and I are small business owners in Kaiser, and I'm the chair of the Kaiser Chamber Government Affairs Committee. It's my pleasure to be here today to support Senator Thatcher's Senate Bill 538. We believe this is a good way to get our collective hands around the regulations and fees are faced by small business owners across the state. Most of the fees or rules by themselves are usually not all that onerous. However, when all of them are added together, not only is there a major expense for small business, there is also a hefty amount of time required for compliance. It's our hope that Senate Bill 538 will be a good first step to allow us to more adequately define the problem. I can speak at length about the issues we've had in our small business, and many of our chamber members can as well. But in order to fix the problem, we need to have good data, not just anecdotes. So we ask that you please join the Kaiser Chamber of Commerce in supporting Senate Bill 538, and we urge you to approve this bill and send it on to Ways and Means. Thanks for your time, and I'm more than willing to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions, Senator?
I have a question for NFIB,
sure.
And that involves the poll that you ran. Did you do any comparison with other states and see, you know, some states are regulated a lot more. I think Oregon's regulated a lot. I was just wondering if there's a comparison from state to state with the unhappiness with overregulation.
Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, that was a national survey that I was citing, and so we could break down that data. I bet state by state I'd have to follow up on that for some state-specific data. But I would, one of the things that came to my attention recently is that the United States Small Business Administration puts out an annual small business profile report for each state and for the country. And every year they report the median income for a self-employed person at their own incorporated business. Yeah. The national average is about $49,000 a year for a small business owner, the median. So 50% are making less than that. Here in Oregon, the median is only $44,000 a year.
And that's without bennies usually.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Senator Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think this is a good thing for us to do. We have to be careful. Because one of the things we really need to look at in this is what was the reason that the regulation came about in the first place? Is it still doing what it was meant to do? Mm-hmm. And is the thing that it's meant to do still needed? And those are the kind of things that I'd want to be sure that we look at in this endeavor. So thank you. I hope we get some good results.
Anybody else? Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this bill? Shannon, is there anybody here from either DCBS or Business Oregon? There's not.
Okay. They stayed away on purpose.
Huh?
They stayed away on purpose.
Hide away. Well, we'll kind
of. Never mind.
We'll follow up with them then, and we will roll this one over until Monday then. So we'll close on that, and we'll open on Senate Bill 99.
Senate Bill 99 requires Senate confirmation of the director of the State Department of Energy. This measure comes to us without a subsequent referral to any other committee, so it goes straight to the floor. It has minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact and no amendments, Mr. Chair.
All righty. Mr. Kaplan.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, Michael Kaplan, Director of the Oregon Department of Energy. I'll be really brief today. I think Senate confirmation for the Director of the Department of Energy, we're actually one of the few agencies that does not have Senate confirmation. I think this is an important step for the Department of Energy and its recovery and its stability going forward. Engagement with the Senate when the governor makes a decision on who should be in the director chair, I think is an important step for outreach for our stakeholder community, for our utilities throughout the state, the ability for you to be both familiar and well-versed in the issues that a director will be facing, I think is an important step for the department and long overdue. There are several bills this session that are dealing with this issue. I think Senator Hansel has a bill. I believe it's part of a number of bills about recommendations from the Oversight Committee that met for all of 2016. This is our version. So obviously we're partial to it, but if you pass any of them, we'd be thrilled. So thank you, and I'd be happy to take any questions if you have them.
Any questions of Mike? Senator Monroe.
Yeah, is the governor's office taking a stand on this?
She likes this bill.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Monroe. Yes, the governor, she identified this last year as an important step that she identified with a number of other changes that she'd like to see at the department as something that was necessary for our future.
Thank you.
Anybody else? I would note for the record that the Rules Committee has already passed out a bill which does the same thing, but it also has the same issue for the director of the Housing Department. And so I'm not sure we need two, but I think I want to consult office on that. Anybody else? Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else wishes to testify on Senate Bill 99? Okay, we're going to close on Senate Bill 99. And
we can stand at ease for just a moment, Senator Olson. I'll come over from next door, and then we can jump right
you
in.
You don't want to move that to the floor?
These two? Yeah. I probably ought to go down with him. We can open them together, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Open these two together.
Do you pass to floor?
You're going to chair. I'm going to go down there. And by the way, you put the LC opinion on the wrong one.
Senator Olson.
There he is.
Come on down.
Come on down. I'm going to come join you.
Cool. And you want to open them together?
Open them together.
We're going to open Senate Bill 908 and 952. Patrick? A little briefing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will give you a quick briefing on these. Provided I can find where I'm at. So, Senate Bill, both measures establish an Oregon Energy Commission as a policy and rulemaking body for the State Department of Energy and transferring some duties of the department to the commission and make other modifications. We have separate amendments for each bill. There's an amendment for Senate Bill 908, which I'm sure the chair will speak to, and an amendment for Senate Bill 952, which I'm sure Senator Olson will speak to, so I will let them do so. Just so you know, both measures, it's been requested for both measures that if either moves, that they be moved to the Ways and Means Committee because they'll have so significant budgetary impacts. And with that, we have fiscal and revenue hall pass light statements to allow the committee to do so.
Okay.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Who wants to go first?
You're the chair. I don't want to usurp your authority.
All righty. Well, for the record, Lee Beyer, senator from District 6, and formerly the co-chair of the Oversight Committee on the Department of Energy, which Senator Olson also served on. We did that. We took a long look at that. I mean, I think we probably took a more in-depth look at that department than any other state agencies have looked at. We spent months on it, going through it and went through every program and things. And we've developed a package of bills, most of which are in the House, I will say, that dealt with changing things like the tax credits and other pieces of that, moving the energy loan program to the labor. But one of the things that I think we had universal agreement on is this department needs to be shaped, needs a governing body, a commission or board, and needs to have more refined direction is the way to go. And that's what the intent of this bill is to really deal with the structure of the department. So it does that. It revisits the charge to the department. It revisits or creates a commission. It creates the commission's appointment of the director rather than the governor's appointment, confirmed by the Senate. So a little different than the last bill we heard. And it really focuses the department on more of a research aid for the legislature and the governor, looking at the policies, following what's happening in energy, and developing a strategic direction for the state in cooperation, you know, with the legislature doing that. So that's kind of the intent of the bill. There's a lot of detail in it, but that's the nuts and bolts of it. It recognizes that a lot of the energy policy that we deal with has to be done in conjunction with the environmental rules, just because that's what the state law says, the existing state law, and it tries to take a long-term look and meld things together more. So you can look through it. That's kind of the nature of the bill, and I'll stop there and let you do yours.
Thank you very much. Chair Thompson, Vice Chair Thompson, and members of the committee, my name is Alan Olson. I am a senator. I represent Senate District 20. Senate District 20 runs from Charbonneau to Estacada and from Happy Valley down to Molino. I had the pleasure of being on the Oregon Department of Energy Oversight Committee, and it was a pleasure because Senator Beyer ran a remarkable committee. It was really interesting. I unfortunately missed a little bit of it for some medical reasons, but in fact, there was a lot to be learned. We started in January of 2016 and ended our work in November of that same year. Our task was to review the agency's charge, mission, and statutory responsibilities, review the agency's organizational structure and funding streams, assess the current gaps and deficiencies in the agency's operational structure and personnel capacity to fulfill its mission and programs, assess the agency's capacity to facilitate stakeholder relationships, both public and private, to fulfill its mission. At the conclusion of this oversight, my assumption was that the committee would meet, digest the material, and provide statutory language to revive and rehabilitate an agency mired in conflict and turmoil. The co-chairs put out a draft report. In consultation with three other members of the Oversight Committee, we have prepared Senate Bill 952. Senate Bill 952 first and foremost provides an updated mission statement. The Legislative Assembly finds and declares that it is the goal of Oregon to promote the efficient use of energy resources and to develop permanently sustainable energy resources. The need exists for comprehensive state leadership in energy production, distribution, and utilization. It is therefore the policy of Oregon that development and use of a diverse array of permanently sustainable energy resources be encouraged, utilizing to the highest degree possible the private sector of our free enterprise system. That through state government example and other effective communications, energy conservation and elimination of wasteful and uneconomical uses of energy and materials be promoted. This conservation must include but not be limited to resource recovery and materials recycling. That the basic human needs of every citizen, present and future, shall be given priority in the allocation of energy resources, commensurate with perpetuation of a free and productive economy. That energy-efficient modes of transportation for people and goods shall be encouraged. That cost-effectiveness be considered in state agency decision-making relating to energy sources, facilities, or conservation, and that cost-effectiveness be considered in all agency decision-making relating to energy facilities. That state government shall provide a source of impartial and objective information in order that this energy policy may be enhanced. The goal of this mission statement is to make the Oregon Department of Energy the encyclopedia of all things relating to energy resources and energy technology. The Energy Oversight Committee agreed that a commission should be formed for oversight of the department. Senate Bill 952 establishes a 7-voting member commission, which is comprised of an economist, a member representing consumer-owned electric utilities, a member representing residential energy users, a member representing industrial energy users, a member representing natural gas utilities, a member with transportation expertise, a member representing those utilities regulated by the PUC. Also one member representing the Pacific Northwest Electric Power and Conservation Planning Council, and one member of the Public Utility Commission. The last two shall serve as ex officio non-voting members of the Oregon Energy Commission. Senate Bill 952 sets up the Oregon Energy Commission this way so that all energy users would be represented in this very critical process. Determining energy resources and technologies for Oregon, this commission would have oversight responsibilities for the Oregon Department of Energy. Terms of office for those members would be laid out in the bill. The members and the director of the agency would be chosen by the governor and approved by the Senate. Senate Bill 952, which is the bill we authored, moves all loan and credit programs, including the Small Energy Loan Program, to the Oregon Business Development Department. And I'm not going to take credit for this part of it because the good co-chair was the one that came up with those ideas that we need to move these loan programs and credit programs out of there. I just followed up on the work that they did. Other programs would be reassigned as necessary. The Rutsey and Betsy would be required to have a forensic audit to determine any default positions or misapplied tax credits. There's a lot of money out there that is at stake. I believe it's $367 million in the Betsy, and some loans in the small energy loan program that are in trouble. The energy supplier assessment, which funds these programs, would have a fixed rate of 0.1%. That's not in the co-chair's bill. This should supply ample funding. As the energy rates for Oregonians increase, this rate will continue to provide an annual increase to the department. One thing about that is that 0.1% provides certainty to the utilities as to what their costs are going to be every year. Senate Bill 952 will also create an information and analysis section that will collect, analyze, and disseminate Oregon energy information. It should research new technologies and resources. Clear metrics should be established to evaluate all forms of energy by using a non-biased, impartial technical analysis considering source, distribution, and cost or savings for Oregonians regarding all energy sources. We would create a technical assistance section that would serve as a resource to the legislature, to stakeholders, and other agencies. They would create a tracking system for all energy resources, including energy efficiencies, fossil fuel generation, and any other potential source of affordable energy for Oregonians. It should identify and analyze energy-efficient technologies and how these technologies can contribute to the state of Oregon energy system. We will also have a nuclear and emergency management section, which currently is in place, that will continue to coordinate cleanup of radioactive sites. This section would also plan for radioactive or chemical accident emergencies by laying out concise plans for displacement of Oregonians in affected areas and cleanup toxic materials. They should coordinate with all other necessary agencies, including the Office of Emergency Management. We would also continue the Energy Facility Siting Council. We would continue with the standards-based approach that includes state and or regional needs, prioritize efficiency and affordability, consider the unsubsidized cost of energy production, and to create standing for citizens to secure a contested case to help enforce existing requirements such as meeting land use, environmental, and ESA regulations. Administrative functions should continue to provide unbiased, quality technical assessments to the governor's office and to the legislature. The director should evaluate the various administrative functions within the agency to determine the most cost-effective manner that services can be delivered and report to the appropriate legislative committees no later than March 15, 2018. As an example, DAS contracting with other agencies or in-house. If in-house, a cost analysis should be provided showing cost savings. The department shall maintain a relationship with the Federal Department of Energy and apply for and be the recipient of any federal energy grants. In administering any grants to the extent practical, the department shall utilize private providers or academic institutions rather than conducting research or operating programs directly. Prepare contingent energy programs to include all forms of energy not otherwise provided in our ORS levels. Provide staff support to the Hanford Nuclear Cleanup Board. Provide staff support to the Energy Facility Siting Council and the Global Warming Commission. This is a very brief overview of 952 and some of its components. The reason we wrote this is I really believe that we do need a Department of Energy. The Department of Energy has been not running smoothly, to be polite, this bill would provide the guidance and technological resources to provide Oregon with a clean and sustainable fuel source for all Oregonians. I think it's time, it's necessary. When you look at the two bills together, most of it is verbatim. We have a couple areas that we need to talk about, but I think that for this committee to look at this and move this to an area where they can be worked so that we can come up with a concise agency that provides the energy resources and technology that this state needs is very important. So I'd ask that you, in your deliberations, consider moving it to the appropriate committee that the chair would so desire to go to.
Ways and Means.
Questions?
Yes. Panel, any questions? Members, any questions?
When you need to wake them up.
They're in the room. Yeah, kind of put us to sleep.
Subsequent to Ways and Means, right?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair. Neither measure came to us with a referral to Ways and Means. However, based on the preliminary analysis by LFO, they have requested that either or both measures be referred to Ways and Means.
Yeah.
So we would have to add one, Mr. Vice Chair.
Seems logical to me.
I would assume it would be, given that you're talking about a major reorganization of the department.
I would think so.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lee, for the time.
Anybody else signed up? Yeah, we have a few.
Go ahead.
Okay. Panel... We'll have our panel come up of three, I guess, Roman Gillian, Paul or Danielle Romaine, and Varner. See me?
I don't want to give it back. Huh?
Sure.
Welcome, gentlemen.
You said gentlemen, you guys better go.
Should I go first?
Sorry. Sure.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer and members of the committee. I'm Roman Gillen, President and CEO of Consumers Power Incorporated. CPI is a member-owned electric distribution cooperative serving 22,000 members in the rural areas of Lincoln, Benton, Linn, Polk, and Marion counties, many of whom are represented by Chair Beyer and Senator Girard on this committee. Thank you, Chair Beyer and the committee, for holding this hearing on a topic of great interest and relevance to CPI members and for allowing me to provide this testimony. I commend both Chair Beyer and Senator Olson for undertaking an exhaustive review of the Energy Department by the Oversight Committee. Reforming the Energy Department's governance is important. I certainly understand that it is neither practical nor feasible for every group to have representation on the proposed ODOE Energy Commission. Both bills clearly represent serious and thoughtful structural changes, but I think it is vital for the consumer-owned utility and rural perspectives to be included. Both of these bills are preferable to us than House Bill 2020, which includes a climate mission for the department. Consumer-owned utilities like ours utilize non-emitting generating resources. While the governance structure of the department is of critical importance, I am also concerned about the funding of the department, particularly concerning the department's use of the energy supplier assessment fee. As you are no doubt aware, these fees have escalated over the past several years. For Consumers Power alone, for the past 15 years, they've increased at a 16% per year average, 16% per year. In 2015 alone, they increased 46%, nearly doubled, and are now at $40,000 a year. The other consumer-owned utilities have experienced similar increases. Even more concerning to me, I understand that ODOE is authorized to increase the ESA several times above its current level, and as I've just shared, ODOE has demonstrated a willingness and eagerness to do so. I'm not sure what ODOE is using this fee for. I'm not sure what value CPI members even receive from ODOE. In all fairness, Director Kaplan has made an effort to find common ground with us on the ESA fee issue, but that common ground has been elusive so far, and discussions continue. Proper funding of the Energy Department is a key issue. Please help us roll back and rein in this runaway ESA fee. Again, thank you for allowing me to provide testimony on this important issue.
Thank you, Roman.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Varner Seaman, here today representing Portland General Electric. I would note that Portland General Electric has a particular interest in the Department of Energy and its future. We're the largest private sector payer of the energy supplier assessment. I think that in many ways we're also one of the largest customers of services of the Department of Energy through facility siting and having pretty frequent interaction with departmental staff on any number of issues. First, I just want to thank the committee that did the oversight oversight work over the summer, and Chair Beyer for your work and pulling that together. I think it was a pretty massive effort. What we saw out of it is that there are many places, and I think the testimony you just heard from Senator Beyer and Senator Olson points to, there are many areas where there's agreement in terms of what the future of the Department of Energy should be and a path going forward. I think the biggest that was a question for the Oversight Committee over the summer was, should the department exist? And I think pretty clearly stakeholders and legislators who were part of that process said, yes, there is a role for the Department of Energy. There's a pretty important role. And I think largely one of the primary things that folks have talked about as being an expert and a resource to policymakers in the state in terms of energy information, sort of similar to the Energy Information Administration at the federal level. There are also some fairly straightforward reorganizational things. Senate confirmation of the director of the Department of Energy, as Mr. Kaplan testified earlier, I think is an area where there's agreement. Moving the small energy loan program to Business Oregon is a place where there's a lot of agreement. There are a few places, and especially as we look at the House version of ODO restructuring, I'd like to speak generally about this because I think there's going to be some continuing work to get agreement between the two chambers and the path forward. One of the things we appreciate about the Senate approaches as opposed to the House approach is that in the commission structure, and it seems like this is an area of consensus among legislators, that there should be a commission to oversee the Department of Energy. We like that there is more room for people with expertise in energy policy on the Senate side. We've heard some representation of the House side where it seems there's a particular effort to keep utilities from having a role in the commission. I'm not sure necessarily that PGE needs to have a role in the commission, but we do think that if you're going to have a commission overseeing this agency, you need to have people with subject matter expertise, knowledge of what's going on, and the ability to understand what the agency is up to, what the context is for energy, and having some ability to be informed and have some background knowledge. We worry very, very strongly that if we don't have people with expertise in a commission role, that you get a great opportunity for staff capture, and for instead of having oversight, you end up in the opposite, where you've got a commission that's kind of running an interference between the legislature, the governor's office, and the staff of the department. Having people who know what they're talking about is essential for that commission if the legislature chooses to create one. Second thing we'd say is on there's a question, the House version 2020, which is being considered right now, has DEQ become the Department of Energy and Climate? We don't object to the state taking a look at climate. We don't object to state agencies taking a look at climate. I mean, this is something that we worked pretty seriously in the last session on climate legislation that is still fairly unpopular in some parts of this body. We acknowledge that. But if we're going to have a conversation about this, the DEQ already has staff doing climate work. They've got people in climate roles. I think that there's a question, what is the department in the state of Oregon that has point for climate issues? Is it DEQ or is it Department of Energy? I had the opportunity to work several years ago in California, and they make a joke in California that there's a 3-2-1 rule. If you've got three dockets in two separate departments or agencies of the state on one issue, you're in trouble. And I think that the question we get into here is who's going to be on point for some of these issues, and are we going to have competition between agencies? And I think that needs to be acknowledged. And then finally, I think one of the things that we just want to point to, I think that there's some discussion in both House and Senate bills about taking a look at the Energy Facility Siting Council. We are a large customer of FSAC. All of our power generations, our fossil generation that occurs in the state of Oregon, as well as some transmission lines, have ongoing permits to operate. They're administered by FSAC. If we're going to make a change to one of our facilities, we need to go to FSAC to petition for that change. If we're going to change what the access point is for a plant, or even sometimes changing the curve of the road going to a power plant, gets an FSAC change. We think that FSAC is an extremely important body for the state of Oregon because it has an ongoing relationship to the power generation that meets our needs as Oregonians. We think that oversight, some review of it makes sense, but we just want the state to keep in mind that these are ongoing issues and that we do have a pretty close operational role with that siting council, and we want people to take that pretty seriously with the with kind of the importance that that acknowledges. With that, I'll conclude my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm not Donnell. We're here with the Romaine Group representing the Oregon People's Utility Districts Association. There are six of us around the state. And we are consumer-owned utilities, basically elected boards providing power in a lot of different areas, rural areas of the state. I'm not going to talk about the things that were already talked about. I sort of shortened my remarks, and there's one subject that they brought up that I'm not even going to talk about at all, and I won't even mention the subject. But thank you for bringing it up. What was interesting, listening to an earlier bill on the Senate confirmation of the director of the department, there were some words that were used, and that was, in its recovery, the Senate confirmation is important because in its recovery, there's a need for stability, basically. And that's the problem we're facing here. I think what's happening, missing from this discussion this summer, which was very extensive, was at least from our perspective, was a review of what successful programs exist outside of ODO, like utility programs, BPA, PUC, the DEQ, et cetera, that make ODO some of their work duplicative. And that's what scares us. Really, I think where the Senate version, actually versions, both of them, are better than the House, is you separate some issues. The first one is governance. How should this agency be governed? Is the current structure good? And I believe the consensus was no, there needs to be something there. And we can talk about the intricacies of all that. The second part, and this is more in the House version than anything else, and I think Varner alluded to it a little more, is the scope of the work. It seems like everything in the world is being dumped into this agency, and they're going to be the super agency over everything. And that scares the bejeebers out of most of us, that an agency that has not proven itself basically gets sort of new authority, if you would. So what we would like to see is a discussion this year about governance, and hopefully a consensus about governance, and then let that governance take place. Then the logical step afterwards is after you see how that governance works, then, all right, what should this agency really be doing beyond what it's doing today? There are some things that are being taken away in some House bills, and they're very good. Everybody agrees that they should be moved. What we need to do is see how this agency works under a new structure before you put more stuff in this agency. And that's what we would like to see. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Questions?
I got a quick one.
Senator?
And this is going to be too long to answer, but I would appreciate, because you made a point that it's essential to have this, the Department of Energy. I want to know what's essential.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for different people, it's different things. And frankly, for consumer-owned utilities, it's very little. There might be more with investor-owned. Different people have different things. But part of our problem with the funding of the agency is we're paying this tax to, in effect, fund a lot of yes, I was going to use that
case
word.
Hasn't been settled yet.
But we're paying this money, and what benefit do we actually get? There may be a societal benefit, but what does the payer of the tax actually get for paying that? And that's a question that needs to be answered.
Chair Beyer, Senator Girod, one of the things that we heard pretty consistently from the House side, from Representative Bentz, is a concern that as energy policy issues come in front of this body, that they tend to be pretty complicated. It's a dense and complicated topic, and Senator Bentz has expressed a desire to have a state agency that he can rely on to help sort through complicated policy matters so he's not just relying on advocates or utilities when you get a utility or an energy-related issue coming forward. I'm sympathetic to that position, given how complicated the subject matter is, and I hear that critique, and I think that that's a reasonable critique. So that's a partial answer to your question, which I think is agreed much longer.
Others?
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I apologize for Danelle.
Oh, Mr.
Here.
Bauer. Bill, you want to come up as well?
Welcome.
Thank
you. Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I'm Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. We also appreciate the work of Senator Beyer, Senator Olson, and the rest of the committee members on the Department of Energy Oversight Committee. They spent a lot of time learning about the agency and their tasks, and we appreciate that. As Mr. Seaman mentioned, we also work closely with the agency. We're their probably third largest funder. As the committee spent a lot of time looking at things and their programs, we believe that many of the programs, and maybe this will help with Senator Girard's question, are worth continuing, and those would include, for example, energy facility siting. It's very important to us to have a body that we can go to. They have a standards process, which some folks don't like, but at least as an applicant, you know what the standards are going in and how you're supposed to meet those. They have a nuclear safety group, which I think is important to the state to deal with Hanford and some other issues. The planning, as Mr. Seaman mentioned, is important, I think, for all of us. As the committee heard in testimony during the interim, one of the problems facing the agency is that over the years, the legislature added various programs to their tasks, sometimes without reviewing how those might fit in with other programs that they currently had or with staff capabilities. And I, while the agency had a lot of issues that made the press, some of their own making, I'd also suggest that some may have been the result of the direction given by the legislature as well as the governor's office. There was a time when the state didn't have a lot of economic development dollars, yet they had some energy, they had some programs that provided funding for energy projects. And so the Department of Energy at times became almost an economic development department. I think that did create some of the tax and funding problems that the agency eventually had to deal with. We're concerned that some of this may happen again. So we hope that as you go forward, that you look both at Senate Bill 908 and 952, and as Mr. Seaman mentioned, there are a number of other pieces of legislation in the House that are up for work sessions or have been moving. And again, they're not necessarily consistent. And so we think it's important for the legislature to establish some clear policy direction for the agency and would just hope you work that out before all these different measures do move forward through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Bill?
Chair Beyer, committee for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. We all have to admit that we have a problem. This has been an ongoing problem for a couple of decades now, and somehow we have to get a handle on it. 99, 208, and 252 is a start. Whether we can get it done this session or not, I don't know. But when the public out there reads the papers about the scandals that's went on, and it's ongoing today, whether we get through this last solar problem, I don't know, but it's going to boil down to how many millions are going to walk away with and do nothing. I tie these millions into jobs, Oregon jobs, permanent jobs, and that's what they talk about when they come in here asking for these millions of dollars to do their projects. And when you study these jobs, the jobs that are left, you'll find that large majority of them was brought in from out of state. They're gone. And there's hardly any jobs with all these tens and tens of millions that went into these projects.
Yeah, we'll do that.
And somehow that has to change. It's almost to the point to where anything over X amount of millions has to go through ways and means. Whether it's a three-day session or a two-day session or what. I remember a few years back, you folks all got called back in here, and you found out just exactly what the windmills had cost and how many jobs, Oregon jobs, are out there today. Again, I appreciate the work the task force did. They opened up the door. Hopefully we have time this session to get something worked through to where these scandals don't come back again. Oregon can't afford it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions of these gentlemen? Thank you very much.
Lana?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Lana Butterfield. I'm here on behalf of the Pacific Propane Gas Association. And I don't want to take up your time with discussion of the bill itself, but the possible need for an amendment. I met with Director Kaplan a week ago, and we discussed the propane dealer's problem of not being billed correctly for the energy supplier assessment. The utilities get, there are several divisions within a utility, and they get an out so that only one person in that chain is billed the energy supplier assessment. But the propane people are not, and the same gallon of gas is being billed several times. They are asking their AG for an opinion and getting clarification. If that clarification says that we need an amendment to make the law clear, then I'm asking for an amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Lana. Any questions? Seeing none. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on either 908 or 952? Seeing none, we will close on that. Okay, so colleagues, we're going to move on to work sessions. First one, we'll open work session on Senate Bill 121.
Mr. Chair, don't have the paperwork to move 121.
Oops, we'll close on that one. I got the wrong one.
Sorry, it's just 37.
Okay, oh, check that one.
We can't do TriMet.
No, we're waiting for a fiscal statement.
All right, so we'll open on 313.
Not that one, Mr. Chair. 374. My apologies. I should have brought the color coded one.
Yeah, right. You should have.
374 is the only one we have the paperwork to move today, Mr. Chair.
We will move. We will open on 374.
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you. Senate Bill 374 authorizes the Department of Transportation to issue driver licenses, permits, and identification cards that meet the requirements of the Federal Real ID Act. When we met last time, we had a Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment has been replicated with a couple minor additions in the Dash 2 amendment. I can go through that real quickly. The Dash 2 amendment changes the name to a star from Star ID to Real ID, specifies that a person requesting a Real ID be issued must surrender any Real ID previously issued to them by another jurisdiction. It removes unfunded, undefined limit to fee imposed for issuance of Real ID and prohibits disclosure of storing of sharing of stored information, documents, or photographs except to the agency that issued the source documents for purposes of verification of those documents. It deletes new provisions related to comprehensive security plan and training on recognition of fraudulent documents. It specifies the documents be verified prior to issuing a Real ID. It deletes a provision allowing the department to define name, date of birth, and address by rule. It adds a requirement for signature on application. It adds a requirement that the standard driver license include a design differentiating it from the Real ID. It specifies that the Real ID issued to a citizen of country from the COFA expires on the day the person is no longer authorized to stay in the United States or after 1 year if there is no defined end of that authorized stay. And the Dash 2 also directs the department to conduct a public information campaign regarding the differences between the Real ID and standard license and identification cards. Mr. Chair, with the Dash 2 amendment, the measure has a fiscal and revenue light statement both issued. We have been requested by the Senate President and by LFO to refer this to Ways and Means, Mr. Chair.
Well, we'll send it right down there then.
So we have to accept the Dash 2?
Dash 2.
Yeah, the Dash 2.
Are you going to send it with a due pass or anything?
Just a second.
Yes.
Let's move the Dash 2. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 374.
Senator Thompson's moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 374. Discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? The amendment is adopted.
What do you want to send it?
We want to send it down with due pass. It's a Real ID. It's Hansel's bill.
Boy.
Come on, go on the record.
Okay. Right. Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 374 with the Dash 2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Way to go. Senator Thompson has moved Senate Bill 374 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with the due pass with a subsequent referral to a joint committee on Ways and Means. Discussion on the motion. Opposition to the motion.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to say that this is real ID light in that it's voluntary. Nobody will be forced to get a real ID under this proposal. And yet, I believe it will facilitate people, especially in Senator Hansel's district and others who have to access federal properties. It'll give them the opportunity to do that. And also for people anywhere in the state that doesn't have a passport, this will sufficient to get them on airplanes.
Anybody else?
I think it's the right thing to do.
Anybody else? Well, I'm going to support this very stupid federal program.
Thank you.
Because for Oregonians who want to get on airplanes and go to work in federal facilities, I guess they need to have this opportunity. Note again, as the senator said, it is a voluntary program. The projection is that someone who wants one of these driver's licenses will have to pay somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 to $20 more than they would for a regular license. But again, it's voluntary.
I wonder if you have to get this ID to be dragged off of airplanes. What do you think?
You might get dragged off if you don't have this
ID. You might get, okay.
But you probably wouldn't get through the gate to get to the airplane.
That's right.
So we're not united on this vote. Huh?
We're not united. Does anybody besides Senator Girard want to be registered as a no on this?
Maybe.
Senate Bill 374, as amended by the Dash 2s, is passed to the floor with the due pass. Subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. Senator Girard will be recorded as a no. Okay?
Yep.
Done with that one? Close on that. And just checking here, Patrick, since I seem to be screwing this up.
Oh, no.
Is there anything else we can do?
Mr. Chair, I believe the rest of the measures would need to be carried over for action at our last Senate bill meeting on Monday.
We can't do this one?
We don't have a fiscal.
That's what that means,
yeah.
That black
yes,
box?
Yes, I'm sorry. I did not explain that adequately.
So that's what that black box means.
So the black dot meant we don't have
all right.
The gray box meant we could
do colleagues in the audience, we've got a... I just run them off, make sure, because we're at that time of the session. The following bills will be carried over until Monday. Senate Bill 99, 538, 908, 952, 990, 121, 313, 339, 837, 936, 974, 989, 1044, and that's it. Oh, we're going to have a nice agenda on Monday. And with that, we are adjourned.